Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. The word crisis is used often, maybe too often, but when it comes to financial viability and long-term prospects for Pennsylvania's restaurants, bars, and taverns, the word crisis doesn't seem to be an exaggeration. Since the coronavirus hit the state last March and Governor Tom Wolf imposed restrictions to stop or slow the spread of the virus, businesses that serve food and drinks and their employees were perhaps affected more than any other industry. Currently, these establishments are limited to 50% capacity. Drinks have to come with food, and alcohol sales are cut off at 11 p.m. Surveys indicate half of restaurants may not survive. Customers have mixed feelings. Many want to go out to eat and patronize their local businesses, but many also don't want to become infected with the virus. On today's program, we discuss what restaurants want and are looking for to keep themselves operating and successful. Our guest on today's program, John Longstreet, is the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lodging Association. Jim Friss, president and CEO of PJW Restaurant Group, the owners and operators of PJ Willihan's, the Poor House, and the Chop House. And Chris Sirianni, owner and operator of the brewery at Union Station in Erie. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. I'm going to start with you, John Longstreet. How would you describe the state of restaurants in Pennsylvania right now?
Well, Scott, first, thank you for having us on today. It's really good that you're covering this and helping to shed light to the disastrous situation in restaurants. You really covered it well when you said that perhaps there's no harder hit industry than the restaurant industry. First shut down on March 18th, and really the last to reopen and still not fully reopen. As you pointed out, restaurants with self-certification, if they go through a self-certification process, can operate at 50% fire code capacity, but they're not allowed to use bar seating, which most restaurants count on for part of their dining seating to get to that 50%. And you also pointed out they have to serve a meal in order to serve a beer or a glass of wine. So they're still heavily mitigated. And add to that the fact that restaurants also have private dining rooms and hotels have banquet space that they basically can't use because it's still at 10% capacity. So all of those weddings and rehearsal dinners and other private events that people are intent on scheduling cannot be scheduled at this point in time. So it is a very difficult time for them. You pointed out in a survey that we did in November that 45% of the restaurateurs said that without some sort of significant assistance or a change in business climate, they would be closed in 6 months. There's 26,800 restaurants roughly in Pennsylvania. That could be 12,000 restaurants that are gone forever. And those 12,000 restaurants employ about 250,000 employees. There's a total of almost 600,000 employees in our industry, the second largest employer in the state with 10% of the workforce working in restaurants. So it is a devastating time. And to answer the question, first thing restaurants will say is let us operate. They're not necessarily looking for handouts. They're looking to be able to operate at a safe level like they were back in the green phase of reopening that ended on July 15th. And then secondly, there's no question they'll need financial aid to make it through. We have some packages we're working on in that regard, and we did get some small relief from the Pennsylvania legislature this week. We can talk about that a bit later.
Well, I want to tell our listeners at home that if you'd like to weigh in, have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Jim Friss and Chris Sirianni, I want to ask the two of you about your businesses and how you're faring right now. Jim Friss with PJ Willihan's, the Poor House and the Chop House. How do things look right now?
Well, it's been an interesting start to the winter, obviously, with the governor putting in new mitigation on December 13th and having us shut back down to January 4th. So just when you think you're going to make a little bit of headway, you get shut back down again. So it's been a tough start again. The winter makes it very difficult, but our battle cry, like I think every restaurant is right now, is let's get to April because we know we can do it again. We did it last year when it got warm out. We were able to operate outside successfully, but having heavy restrictions in the cold weather is extremely difficult.
Are you serving customers outdoors right now with outdoor heaters or tents or anything like that?
Very limited. We do have fire pits and picnic tables set up at all of our restaurants, and you get a small amount of people. It certainly depends on the day. You might see a couple or two here and there, but with this weather that's set in over the last 2 weeks with the snow, it's basically shut down outdoor dining.
Chris Sirianni, brewery at Union Station in Erie, you're the owner-operator. What about the brewery? How have you fared during this time?
Yeah, well, thank you, Jim. You know, we're on the shores of Lake Erie up here in northwestern PA, and just so you know a little bit about us, we hire about 50 people. We've been around 15 years. And it's just been obviously a crazy year as far as, current status. Getting our doors back open in January at 50%, we've been able to, make some strides. But as, Jim alluded to, a lot of places rely on outdoor seating for a majority of the year or a good part of the year. But climate like this, especially in northwestern Pennsylvania, I know you're getting it around the state right now, but operating with, a foot of snow and in the teens makes it quite difficult. We're doing the best of what we can. Luckily, we're in an old train depot. So we always say that square footage and size has been a liability and a great resource. Lately, it's been a resource. So we can spread people out. But we understand that, we still have to fill seats. And we're blessed with space. And not everybody is. Not everybody's the same kind of model we are. We've been lucky to make it through this with our heads above water, but we are, we're a different kind of setup than maybe that 1 or 5% that have the square footage that we do, to make a run at this.
Mm-hmm. John Longstreet, and we're going to talk about some of the specifics that the three of you brought up and some of the things that you're looking for that could help the situation, but I know we're going to get some people who are going to send emails to us, maybe even phone calls, would say, we're in the middle of a pandemic. We feel for you. We understand that your business is suffering, but these are unprecedented times, and safety has to be the number one concern, as the governor has said, for the people of Pennsylvania. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would say first that we agree 100% that safety has to be the foremost concern. In fact, the restaurant industry is probably, of all retail operators, has the most safety requirements placed on it in normal times as any operator. In fact, it's the only one where there has to be somebody on premises that's certified in safe food handling all the time. And we base our reputation on the fact that we keep people safe while they're ingesting food and beverages in our environment. So safety is nothing new to us, and we added to the ServSafe product immediately COVID safety standards as well. We believe and we've been saying this throughout this, is that there is no evidence that says that if you're social distancing, face masking, sanitizing surfaces, that you can't operate safely. In fact, the longer we go into this, the more evidence there is that restaurants have very little to do with the spread of COVID when they're operating safely. Unfortunately, in the state of Pennsylvania, former Secretary Levine pointed out that they've been unable to track the cases. In other words, there's no effective contact tracing because there's too many cases. Many other states have been able to track it, like New York State, just to the north of us. 74% of the spread comes from household gatherings based on 46,000 cases traced through September through November, and only 1.4% at restaurants. So if there was any indication that restaurants actually had something to do with the spread, that would be another case. The other thing that we have now, we're almost a year into this, Scott. It started on March 18th. And if you look at the states that were very lightly mitigated on restaurants versus the ones that were heavily mitigated, like Pennsylvania, there's virtually no difference in cases per 100,000. And actually, most of the states that were lightly mitigated, even like Ohio next door, has 60% as many deaths per 100,000 as Pennsylvania. They've been at 100% capacity for restaurants with social distancing and face masking almost throughout the entire pandemic, and they have 60% as many deaths per 100,000. So if we didn't know for sure at the beginning of this whether restaurants were a cause of the spread, we know now they are not. So consequently, the work that we've done, unfortunately, in mitigating restaurants to try to keep people safe hasn't kept people safe. Even Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago recently pointed out that restaurants needed to reopen to help to keep people safe because there was too many private gatherings where people were operating unsafely. And she felt like if people got back into restaurants where they're operating safely, they're being served by trained professionals that are following the standards, they'd actually be safer. So I think that we agree safety is a paramount concern. There's no evidence to say that restaurants are unsafe. In fact, there's a lot of evidence to say that you're a lot safer in a restaurant than you are in a household gathering.
Those statistics that you just quoted would probably impress a lot of people. But one of the things that we've heard from the governor and the Secretary of Health and some others as well, that the difference between restaurants, bars, and maybe some other businesses is that customers are sitting for long periods of time, taking their mask off to eat, talking when they're sitting at a table. Do you find that to be, do you think that your statistics bear out that what they say, that that doesn't make a difference?
Well, New York State, for example, most of the state is open at 50%. Now, there are some pockets, New York City, obviously, and also Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo that are mitigated at 25%. But most of the state's been at 50% throughout. The statistics come from there, and they have the same rules as far as face masking and social distancing as Pennsylvania. And they have Pennsylvania has one rule that's even more stringent, is that you're required to be in a seat to be in a restaurant or a bar. So in other words, you cannot be congregating around a bar. You have to be seated to actually be in the restaurant. And if there's no seats available, you have to wait outside. That was a safety measure that we worked with the governor's team to put in place. We felt like that was realistic. So I would say, Scott, that, yeah, it seems to make sense that if you have your face mask off and you're eating and drinking and talking, that that there might be more of a spread, but that's not what the numbers show. I will also say that many restaurants have adopted the philosophy that when you're at your table and you're not eating or drinking, you should still face mask or at least put a face mask on when a server approaches your table. We think that's a wise way to do business, too. And then that way you're keeping the spread from the servers. One of our restaurant owners made the comment that if there was actually this big a problem with restaurants, there would be no servers or bartenders to work because they'd all be out with COVID. There's been very few cases reported for restaurant employees across the state. So I think that the numbers don't bear out the concept, which is really just a theory that restaurants are in the spread. And I will also point out that down in Jim's neck of the woods, down in, I believe it was Chester County and Delaware County and maybe Bucks County also, the health officials in all three counties there pointed out that there was very little spread in restaurants. One of them said it was negligible, and they were actually tracking cases.
Jim Friss, question for you. What's the biggest issue facing your restaurants and the other two, John and Chris, you can weigh in if you'd like this as well. You know, we talked about some of these mitigation restrictions. Capacity, 50%. That is if you self-certify. Those who don't self-certify with the state are limited to 25%. 50% capacity. Have to have food before you can order a drink, or bar seating. Is there one issue that sticks out that makes it difficult for restaurants and bars to be successful?
Yes, I would say, first of all, when we talk about all these different percentages, I think we have to move on from percentages and just talk about social distancing, period. When we talk about 50% of fire code, that's about it. Even if you took the percentage higher, you're not going to get many more people inside a restaurant because typically the fire code's a little greater than the seating is. And so you're going to stay at 50. But I don't see any reason for a percentage, period. We need the bar opened. That's critical. And I think that's the single thing that's really driving a lot of restaurants out of business right now, is not having the bar open. That doesn't mean stand three deep at the bar. That means have 2 seats, 6 feet, have another 2 seats, 6 feet. But having a restaurant that you go into and it's social distance. Nobody looks to see what percentage of what is there. It's just plain social distance. The second piece of it is the customer that's coming out today is a customer that has very little concern. Their concern is the restaurant operating safely? But their concern isn't whether I'm going to get coronavirus in the restaurant or not. They're coming out because they're comfortable with going out. There's lots of people that aren't comfortable with going out. I think, you know, the more we push people home, the more difficult we can make the situation overall. John and I had a discussion with the governor at the start of the football season. And that's when they had already taken the bar away and we were asking for the bar back. And we made it very clear that we were going to drive people to home parties, which was going to increase the chances of getting a virus. They didn't buy into that at all. And that's exactly what happened October, November, December. The facts show it. And so I think if you look at last Sunday with the Super Bowl, it was a different Super Bowl. It wasn't large parties. It was very small parties, lots of takeout, but lots of small takeout instead of big takeout going to big parties.
When you're talking about the opening the bars again, are you suggesting or do you think that bars should have, like I've seen bars with plexiglass in between customers, or there would be open seats in between customers for social distancing? Would that be part of what you would recommend if bars opened?
Absolutely. I would say we operate the bar with the exact same safe standards as we operate the restaurant. There's a difference between a restaurant with a bar and a bar. I mean, so we have to look at both the restaurants. The bar seat is just an additional restaurant seat. So, yeah, you'd have to, if two people walked in together, you'd have two, then you'd have 6 feet, then you'd have the next two. Or do, as you also pointed out, the plexiglass, both of them work. And in a bar that's just a plain bar, I would suggest the same thing because most bars have tables, most bars have seats. It would have to be social distance. But the percentage thing, it just doesn't make sense anymore. Maybe it made sense at the beginning, but I think we're well past that. And I think the southern states really proved that.
We're going to be taking some phone calls.
Back in the spring.
Okay, John.
Scott, back in the spring, Jim and I had the opportunity to work with the governor's team on the green reopening standards. And the bar seating standards that were put in place were some of the safest and yet most sensible across the country. And it required you could sit at the bar, but you had to be seated. You couldn't do two or three deep, like Jim said. And you had to have 6 foot social distancing between parties. And the largest party that could be at a bar was four people. Or they added the ability to put in plexiglass barriers, and many bars at restaurants purchase these plexiglass barriers to keep their guests safe, only then to a month later have bar seating prohibited.
We're going to take some phone calls and get some of your emails on the air in just a few moments. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Thanks for joining us for Smart Talk this morning on WITF 89.5 and 93.3. We'll get you right back to the program in a minute, but it is our Roses fundraising campaign. I'm Joe Ulrich, and our program director, Fred Vigent, is with me. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Joe.
And, you know, when you support public radio, when you support us during these fundraisers, you help to support programs like Smart Talk. And this is our Roses fundraiser, so this is a particularly fun fundraiser where you can send a message of love to someone, send some roses, and at the same time, you're supporting programs like Smart Talk. There is so much work that goes into Smart Talk to produce a daily show, you know, lining up guests and scheduling things. And, you know, these days, doing everything remotely has made it a little more challenging. And your contributions help make this kind of thing possible.
That's right. And you can make that contribution at WITF.org/roses or call us at 1-800-233-9483. And remember, roses are not just for sweethearts. It's a wonderful surprise for mom or dad, for a child away at school, maybe even a friend or a neighbor. Think of the special people in your life, a teacher, a caregiver, or even a military vet. Everyone deserves to feel special, and the gift of roses is sure to bring a smile to their face. And you can do that. Ordering is easy at WITF.org/roses or calling us at 1-800-233-9483. As Joe mentioned, not only are you sending a surprise to someone important in your life, you're also supporting Smart Talk and all the great programs here on WITF. Again, that's WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483.
And roses say so many different things. They don't just say, I love you. They can say, I miss you. I care about you. I'm proud of you. I'm thankful for you. So this year, think about someone that you'd like to send a message to. It's been a strange year. And, you know, this being one of the coldest, darkest times of the year, it can be really nice to send someone some bright roses to kind of brighten up their day. It's so nice to have them sitting on the table somewhere where you see them and they just kind of give you a little pop of joy. And they smell great, too. It's always nice to walk by and smell the roses, so to speak. So you can send roses to someone that is important to you that you're thinking about with a contribution of $100. You can send a half dozen red or rainbow roses. Contribution of $125, you can make that a full dozen red or rainbow roses. And if you'd like to step it up to two dozen red roses in a vase, you can make a contribution of $250. Those can be delivered in Central PA only. And if you want to add a 6-inch plush bear to any of these orders, you can do that for an additional $10 contribution. You can do it really easily and quickly at our website at WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483.
And it is Wednesday. Valentine's Day is coming up on Sunday. You have until this Friday afternoon to send roses somewhere across the country. So take care of this business right now. No need to wait. No need to wait a second longer. Make the contribution this morning during Smart Talk in the name of Smart Talk and get those roses out to someone important, whether a loved one or just a friend or just someone important in your life. You can do that at WITF.org/roses. Or 1-800-233-9483. Again, the levels, a contribution of $125, red or rainbow roses, a dozen that is, and then a half dozen red or rainbow roses for a contribution of $100 at WITF.org or 1-800-233-9483.
It's very easy. Just take care of it before the weekend happens. You don't want to get into the weekend and have to worry about sending the roses. So take care of it right now at WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483. And thanks.
Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, John Longstreet, is the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lodging Association. Jim Friss is president and CEO of PJW Restaurant Group, the owners and operators of PJ Willihan's, the Poorhouse, and the Chop House. And Chris Sirianni, owner and operator of the brewery at Union Station in Erie. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk@witf. Let's take a phone call from Mike in Chambersburg. Mike, you're on Smart Talk.
Hi. Yeah, just a quick question. Since you're allowed to operate at 50%, are you capping out at 50%, or are you turning away people at the door? I'm wondering, is the demand there? I know no one in my extended family is going out anywhere until we're vaccinated.
Who wants to take that one?
I'd be glad to take that one. Thanks for the call, Mike. We are, and I will tell you, I can speak confidently for Erie County and Northwestern Pennsylvania, as we have our finger on the pulse of this one very closely and talking to operators on a daily basis. We are turning people away on weekends. And for those of you, out there, our comments on this have been, you know what, we can make a run at this thing, maybe Monday through Thursday at 50%. I think a lot of restaurants, casual dining restaurants, can make a run at it. We need to have our seats full on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's what puts us in the black for the week. We're just bailing out water during the week. On weekends, yeah, I mean, it's an overwhelming amount of people that want to go out. They're not vacationing. They're not going to events, sporting or otherwise. And people have disposable income. And honestly, people, I think, for the most part, feel pent up and feel safe. I think people, restaurants across Pennsylvania and where we're at, just over the Ohio border and New York border, restaurateurs are knocking this thing out of the park as far as safety, feeling good. Now, I understand if someone's family or individual has underlying health conditions or just doesn't feel comfortable going out without a vaccination, I 100% support, you know, that that for those folks. Everybody's a little bit different, but for the most part, people that are feel healthy or feel confident about going out are going out. And you can see it, whether it's food and retail or anywhere, you know, people are out and about. As I look at traffic drive by my window right now. So, there are people that want to dine, and there are people that we do have to turn away most definitely every single weekend.
Let me follow up with that. I have to say that, gentlemen, we're receiving emails from some people who are kind of critical of some of the things that you've said. Now, obviously, when you're saying that there are people who want to go out and that you are turning away, not everyone feels this way. But I want to bring up some of their points. Eric says, all this talk of best safety practices is well and good, but there are many restaurants in open defiance of these rules. No mask, no social distancing. Some have even continued to operate after having their business licenses revoked by the state for noncompliance. I have no sympathy for these restaurants, and it makes me not want to go to any restaurant until my family is fully vaccinated. So, John Longstreet, let me address that. He actually brings up two different points here that I want to bring up to you. But the one that, I know that everyone out there has seen this, where there are restaurants across the state, establishments across the state, that are defying the governor's restrictions, and that the second part of what Eric said, I hear a lot of people saying, I have no sympathy for them if they're not going to follow the rules. How do you respond to that, and what can you do about it?
Well, Eric, the first thing I'll say is we have no sympathy for them either. Since day one, we've encouraged all restaurants, and we opened the association up to all restaurants, whether they could afford to be members or not. And we stopped billing existing members because we knew they needed the cash flow so badly. But so all restaurants, we've said, you need to follow the regulations. You need to follow the rules. And we've done an extraordinary job through a daily update that we started publishing 7 days a week on March 18th to inform people what the rules were and to encourage them to follow them. I've had calls from restaurants that are not following the rules. And I've said, we will not support you. We will not assist you in that regard. Because the first thing we have to do as an industry is do the right thing and keep people safe. I agree with Eric. I have no sympathy for them. And if there are some of those listening that are currently members and they don't want to be members because I don't support them breaking the rules, I understand that. But that's fine, because the most important thing we can do as an industry is keep people safe. We have a tagline on our signatures that says, mask up to save lives and to save the industry. And it's that important that restaurants follow the rules. We believe, and I don't think anybody actually has the statistic, but just based on what we've seen, we believe 95% of the restaurateurs are following it. And I will quote what Secretary Levine said in her July 13th press conference last year about personal responsibility. When she was asked, what about a restaurant that isn't following the rules? She said, if you go into a restaurant that's not following the rules, you should turn around and go out to another restaurant, because most are following the rules. And I agree with that.
John, but let me follow up on that a little bit. Those that are not following the rules, you know, I don't think most of, and I can't speak for them, but most of them, I'm sure, would say, listen, this is how I make my living. If I don't open up and get these customers into our establishments, I'm going to go out of business. This is it. This is desperation. And they've decided between what the governor says and the Secretary of Health have said are safe and keeping their businesses open.
Well, let me give you two examples to that point. And this happened during the Christmas shutdown. And by the way, we implored the governor's team not to shut down during Christmas, because that's the time that restaurants count on to be able to bring in the funds they need to survive until spring. And it's also the time that the workers, in particular, the tipped employees, servers and bartenders, count on to be able to have a Christmas. So we heard two different things when the governor shut down. Some restaurants did defy the shutdown and they stayed open, but they followed all of the rules. So in other words, they were face masking, social distancing, sanitizing, no seat, no service, all those sort of things. Now, they weren't following all the rules because they were open in defiance, and we don't condone that. But they were following all of the safety rules that had been in place prior to that. And the reason they did so, and I heard this from many operators, is they said, I cannot bear to lay off my employees 2 weeks before Christmas. No business would ever want to do that. And anybody that's been in business, I know, would agree. The second case, and there's right there in Harrisburg, Cafe Fresco, that many are familiar with, and the Furtenbaughs made the decision to follow the governor's orders, and they closed. But they took a personal loan. These are two individuals that own the restaurant. They took a personal loan to pay the employees so that they wouldn't have to lay them off over Christmas. You can imagine what it's like when you have your house at risk and things like that. People are making tough decisions, but we would never suggest that anybody operate in without following the CDC or the state health guidelines.
Jim and Chris, have you had to lay anyone off?
This is Jim. Absolutely. At one point, I had almost 2,000 people laid off. And to have to go back at Christmas time and do it again was the most difficult decision I ever had to make in my entire career. So it has been a challenge. But just a quick follow-up to the scenario you laid out a minute ago. I was out in one of our restaurants the other night, and there was a young couple, probably 30-ish, three young boys, one, three, and four, maybe. I mean, they look like they were every 18 months apart. And the young couple said to me, you know why we come here, Jim? And I said, no. And she said, because we feel safe. So it was always about food and service. Now it's about food, service, and safety.
Will any of those employees be called back?
I'm sorry, Jim, I missed that.
Will any of those employees, those 2,000 employees that have had to be laid off, will they be called back if things get back to normal?
I have over half back right now, and eventually we expect to be 100% everybody back.
Chris, what about you? Have you had to lay people off?
Sure. We have about 50 employees. We, through the 0, 25, and 50% capacity, we've laid up to 45 people off. Right now, much like Jim, we have over half of our staff back. That's a good thing. But it's not helping these folks who were shut out. We've heard of people still not getting unemployment from that shutdown right before Christmas. That's what was crazy about that. These people, there was no plan. There was no assistance from the state almost a year into this thing, being shut down by the state with no assistance, no help. Obviously, Harrisburg was out of session. They weren't getting anything done over the holidays, and unemployment was backed up plus some shutdown over the holidays. So, that was the hard part. And it was, what Jim said, that the toughest professional thing I've ever had to do is, shut off 40 people, days before Christmas with no income and no safety net, in line.
Let's take a phone call from Heath in Fairview. Heath, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Are you still with me?
Yes, I am. Go ahead.
Okay. I just think it's a great time for restaurants to actually re-embark on the ventilation systems, the downsizing. People have money. They want to spend it on outside food, trust me, because not everybody's wife's a good cook. But or husband or partner, but what I'm getting at basically, essentially, is that I think the takeout service needs to be really hummed up, round up here, and given to the according restaurants, and also. I believe that the answer to this is just downsizing in quality, and that is a beautiful thing.
Heath, thank you very much for your call. John, I'm sure everyone has opinions on this, but John, there have been industries that have said that what we've gone through right now is a good time to take a step back and look at our industry. Is that a good thing, or is that something that restaurants are doing, should be doing?
The restaurateurs are resilient. They wouldn't be in the business, Scott, if they weren't. It's maybe the hardest business to be in. I've been in the restaurant business. I can speak firsthand. I think most people agree with that. So, yes, they're looking at ways to do things better. And I'm certain that when we get through this, restaurant operators will have adopted things that they'll keep, and it'll make them better operators moving out of it, and other ways of generating revenue and being able to support their employees. Heath mentioned one of them, and that's takeout and delivery. Very few restaurants were doing significant takeout and delivery, particularly full-service restaurants. They were doing maybe 10% in takeout of their total sales. Many of them now are upwards of 30, 35% of what they were doing before. So they're doing a lot better with that. They're going to find ways to streamline. Many restaurant companies with massive menus have reduced their menus significantly, which makes it easier to produce the products, particularly for takeout and delivery. And I think that that's going to be a trend that's going to follow afterwards, after we get through this too. Unfortunately, one of the things they're going to have to do is find more ways to operate efficiently. And we know that that often means less workers. And that would be the sad part of this. And of course, the really sad part is the restaurants that can't make it through, which are going to be mostly local independents that are so beloved to us.
Let's take a phone call from Michael in Annville. Michael, you're on Smart Talk.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I had two questions. One, when the governor put the rules in effect, you had to purchase some food. So a lot of places you sold your dollar hot dogs. And I'm referring mostly to private clubs. But they haven't been doing that in months. Is that rule still in effect?
That is still in effect. That's the rule that essentially you have to buy a meal to get a drink. And there's a lot of places, and particularly as you described, private clubs like VFWs and things like that,
that
didn't really have food service, that had to either totally shut down or adopt the menu. Currently, there's still a requirement that you buy food in order to be served, a drink or a beer. And I think the reasoning behind this was the idea they didn't want congregating at bars, but they must have lost sight of the fact that the original rules already took care of that by requiring that you be seated to be served either food or beverages in a socially distant setting. So it was really overkill. It doesn't really accomplish anything except for putting some of those out of business, like you said.
Yeah, they did it a month or two, and they don't, which is okay by me, because most of the people bought the hot dog and threw it away, just left it laying on the bar. My other question is, do you think the governor's going to punish these restaurants that didn't go by the rules when it comes down to federal money, stimulus money, or state money that's available? I mean, he did that, the Lebanon County,
right?
As far as they held money back.
Michael, thank you very much for your call. John, what about that?
Yeah, if you don't mind, let me use this opportunity to say some good news is that the state House and the Senate unanimously approved a grant for restaurants and hotels that will be distributed through the counties of $145 million. They did that since they've been back in session with money that Governor Wolf transferred from the workers' comp fund. So that's the first direct relief the industry's received in the last year, but $145 million, if you can look at it, spread over 26,800 restaurants, 1,500 hotels, doesn't go very far, but we call it a nice down payment. Michael, there's no indication that there would be, the counties are going to have to make the decision on who gets the money. There's no indication that there would be any, as you describe it, punishment for those that didn't follow the rules. However, the governor, through the health department, is suing many of the restaurants that opened in defiance of the Christmas shutdown order. And I don't know where that stands right now. I know I've seen some legislators that, while they're not condoning it, they've said they think it's the wrong use of the legal funds to be suing them, and they should be enforcing them in some other way.
Well, that brings up a point. Michael used the word punishment. I've gotten the sense throughout this pandemic that many people, and I'm not just talking about your industry, but many people overall have kind of had the feeling or the sense that Governor Wolf was punishing them rather than instituting restrictions to keep people safe. Are there members? I mean, I have actually heard, and I don't know whether you're members or not, but some restaurants, some of those that have defied, have said, we're being punished. The governor is punishing our industry. Are there those out there who feel that way?
I'm sure there are. It would be hard to support that, though. He has said many times he's targeted the restaurant industry. And I think, and those are his words, and he's targeted it because he believed in, and I think the facts now show erroneously, that the restaurants were, could be a cause of spread. No one really knew what to do when we got into this, and neither did the governor's office. So they were doing it by trial and error. Unfortunately, the restaurant industry suffered by the trials and the errors of overly mitigating restaurants. We now know, if you compare it to any other states, like Jim points out, the southern states, which are operating almost like back to normal, and they have less deaths per 100,000 than Pennsylvania does in a similar case count. Florida, for example, has, if you look at the drop-in reservations, as aggregated by Open Table, the largest aggregated restaurant reservations in the country. As of today, Florida restaurants are down 25% in reservations. Pennsylvania's are down 70%, almost totally closed. And then some say, well, you can't compare Pennsylvania to Florida. Just look at Ohio. They're down only 48%. And Ohio's been open at about 100% with, well, 100% most of the time with social distancing and face masking. Restaurants like Chris is really take the brunt of that because he's on the Ohio border. So his customers are driving across, have been driving across the border throughout the pandemic to eat in Ohio. And according to actual statistics, Ohio's management of the crisis has been actually better than Pennsylvania's, just based on the numbers.
All right, I'm going to make a comparison with Florida, and it's on another issue. And that is minimum wage. Florida voters voted for a constitutional amendment that would increase their minimum wage. Pennsylvania's Governor Tom Wolf has proposed increasing the minimum wage to $12 and eventually $15 an hour by the year 2027. President Biden has proposed a $15 an hour minimum wage. How does that impact restaurants? Would you pay $15 an hour? How would that, what kind of impact would that have? Jim Frist, let me ask you first.
Well, I think number one, the most devastating part of that proposal is the tip wage. The tip wage in Pennsylvania today is $2.83, and the average server makes between $20 and $25 per hour. So the heading toward $12, there's a lot of us right now that are paying significantly more than $12 today. In some of the rural areas, that's not the same. But we find that it's supply and demand has created a market in that range. The tip wage is a whole nother story. To change a $2.83 to a $15, and that's devastating to our industry. And I think you would find if you polled tip workers across the state that they want nothing to do with $15 an hour because they make significantly more than that and firmly believe that if we have a tipped wage at $15, they're not going to get the tips.
Chris, what about you? What are your thoughts on that?
I would 100% emphatically echo what Jim just said, that the tip wage is probably the larger concern for us. I know our servers and bartenders do well when they're allowed to do what they do best and give great service. So they would be taking a giant hit on this. As far as I would agree, hey, I think anybody, any reasonable operator, anybody with any kind of reason and knows economics, I think it's time for the minimum wage to go up. I think it should be looked at more often. But to make one swoop or one giant jump to $12, you know, in a almost a 50% increase, and then you know, jump into that 15. I think it needs to be done systematically. Needs to be smart, and with caution and care. The one thing, you know, outside of the economics of this, there's a bigger picture that most people aren't talking about, and that is the fact that you're already paying. We're already paying our you know, back of the house, most places in the state, probably about $15 and higher, just for a prep or a line cook. So they're there right now. Those folks will be hurt when it is, and we've had this conversation with our staff. Some of them are excited in the back of the house that all of a sudden they will be up at 15. The problem is there will be parity back there at 15. The other issue for us, and you know, needs to be brought to light, is the fact that we're probably not going to hire that 18-year-old dishwasher at $15 an hour. or that entry level person. We're probably going to have more of our, you know, our prep and some of our line cooks pick up some of those duties. And that goes beyond economics. That goes to the fact that a lot of people come up in this industry working their way up, whether you're a teenage host or a dishwasher or a prep or a food runner, or whatever you are, you work your way up. Those are the first people that are going to get cut, at least, you know, with our model. And how do you get those people into the industry to work their way up, whether, you know, it's for a good part-time job, but maybe it's a career. We have a chef who has literally worked in our area for, you know, his entire life, starting at a dishwasher at a country club. You know, now he's a $60,000 a year employee, doing quite well for himself with no college degree. So there's a long-term effect well beyond the economics of staffing and how we run our industry.
John Longstreet, the argument for a minimum wage is that, okay, now $2.83 an hour, you know, if you don't have to, I have to remember that we have a shortened show today. I'm sorry, I won't be able to ask that question. Gentlemen, okay. I want to thank the three of you for being with us today. John Longstreet is president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lodging Association. Jim Friss is president and CEO, PJW Restaurant Group. And Chris Sirianni, owner and operator of the breweries at Union Station in Erie. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. Really appreciate
it. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a good day.
Hello, everyone, and good morning. Thanks for joining us for Smart Talk 1A, coming up in just a few moments. I'm Fred Vigent, Director of Programming, and joined this morning with Joe Ulrich. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
And Valentine's Day is this weekend. Joe, are you ready?
No. What can I do, Fred?
Joe, I got a deal for you.
Oh.
I got a deal. You know, don't worry. WITF and Royer's Flowers have you covered. You can send roses to that someone special or someone important in your life by supporting the programs you love right here on WITF. And you can do that in three easy steps. Are you ready to write these down,
yes,
Joe?
Yes, I've got my phone here. I'm going to tap it out.
Okay. Visit WITF.org/roses. Mm. Do I need to spell that out or you got roses?
I think I got that part.
Okay. Or you can use your smartphone and actually call somebody if you'd like. 1-800-233-9483. And either way, either through our website or by calling us, you can order a dozen, two dozen, or half dozen long stem red or rainbow roses for your Valentine or loved one. Step two is to create a special message. And you can also consider adding an adorable soft teddy bear for an additional $10 donation. And then step three, easiest one, listen to the programs you enjoy right here on WITF 89.5 and 93.3 every day.
Now, did you say that that also supports the programs that I love and enjoy here on WITF?
I think I did.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, that's the great thing about the Roses fundraising campaign is you get to do two things at once. You send a message of love to someone that is important to you or someone that you're thinking about, and you're supporting programs like Smart Talk, like 1A, like Morning Edition. All these programs have costs associated with them, and we are able to make them available on the air for you with your contributions. You know, one thing I always like to point out is that contributions cover about half of the programming costs here at WITF. So know that when you make a contribution, when you send roses, you really are a part of why we can bring this kind of programming to the Central Pennsylvania region. So it is a very important service, and you support it with your contributions. And Valentine's Day is coming up, and yep, it might be a good idea to take care of it before the weekend, because, you know, you get into the weekend, you're running some errands, maybe you're lounging, and you want to,
you'll be busy,
you could be busy over the weekend,
yeah,
and you never know, could get some snow, so maybe you want to take care of that right now. Send some roses to someone important to you at WITF.org/roses, or give us a call at 1-800-233-9483.
Joe, speaking from experience, every week, you know, the week starts and you're like, I'll get to it. I got the whole week, and, you know, I'll do it Tuesday afternoon. No, okay, Wednesday, right, Thursday. All of a sudden, it's Friday afternoon, and you did nothing. That happens to me quite often. This is one thing. Joe and I are here to simply remind you to take that extra moment, break away from your morning routine for just about a minute or two to make that contribution this morning to support Smart Talk, to support 1A Morning Edition, and sending some lovely flowers out to someone in your life. You can do that at WITF.org/roses or by calling us at 1-800-233-9483. Again, a contribution of $100, we can send a half dozen red or rainbow roses. For a contribution of $125, a dozen red or rainbow roses. Contribution of $250, two dozen red roses in a vase. You can do that at WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483.